Welcome to the 127th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, David Udo, and we're recording on the Monday evening after Arsene Wenger's 1,000th game, the defeat at Chelsea, and 24 hours before the team get the chance to show some improvement at home to Swansea City. So, as traditional, the panel introductions. First up, he's not been on the panel for a while, although he's an ever-present in the background, organising our monthly gathering and writing the introductory scripts for me to balls up once I hit the record button. So, stepping back into the limelight, it's a welcome back to the editor of the Gooner, Mr. Kevin Witcher.
And just how prescient were those words, Mr. Udo?
Seriously, it's like reading a cross between Chaucer, Shakespeare and Nietzsche in the same foul swoop. Next up, a returning guest, a spokesman for the Arsenal Supporters Trust, currently waging a war with the board in an attempt to get more shares freed up for the fan share scheme. He also handles the PR for the England cricket team, so he's used to seeing epic fails at non-football venues, as well as Arsenal matches. He's also a man who enjoys a good Twitter feud or two. It's a pleasure to say hello once more to Mr. Tim Payton.
Good evening.
Finally, a now regular Gooner contributor whose first submission was an account of watching a North London derby in Vietnam, which reads like Apocalypse Now. These days, he's more likely to be interviewing journalists and ex-players for our benefit. A contributor to the Islington Gazette, London Evening Standard, The Sunday People, When Saturday Comes, World Soccer, 442, In Bed with Maradona, The Football Pink and The Inside Left, amongst a few others. It's his first time on the podcast panel, so it's a particularly warm welcome to Mr. Laith Yousif.
Hi.
The biggest library in the whole of North London. So, gents, we last hit the airwaves at the end of February, and since then, March has seen away trips to Stoke, Bayern München, Spurs and Chelsea, with just a solitary home game versus Everton in the FA Cup quarter-final. 100,000 things to talk about, but let's start with Wenger's own 1,000th game at Chelsea. Mr. Payton, is that it now for Arsenal's title challenge, or is there a tiny little bit of hope?
There's always hope, but you've got to have an awful lot of it at the moment. That's it. Teams that perform like that in the running don't win titles. Look at what the other three are doing. They're on the upward curve. Arsenal are spluttering. It's very few points taken out of the last few games. And unfortunately, I think the 1,000th game came to symbolise quite a lot of Arsene Wenger's reign.
So, yeah, it's kind of drawn a line underneath it. But Laith, has the fat lady warmed up and ready to bell out to us? Or do you think if we beat Chelsea, get a miracle against Man City, and they drop points against Man United tomorrow night, we're going to win this?
I must admit, I'm quite a positive fan sometimes. And I've had a season seat for 3 decades, gone home and away everywhere, slept on roundabouts for an Arsenal before. I've been at Chelsea loads of times to watch Arsenal, and that, to be fair, was the worst performance I've seen. I saw, most of us have seen the 6-2 against United in 1990 when we lost in the League Cup. You know, 6-1 at Old Trafford, 2001, various other defeats, 5-0 against Chelsea in the League Cup. But that was awful. There was no spirit, there was no fight, there was no passion, there was nothing. It was embarrassing.
I remember one point when he came on in the first half, Thomas Vermaelen was having to force himself at left back, and I was sitting pitch side next to my brother, who's a photographer, and Vermaelen was there effing and blinding at everyone, shouting that there was no one on his side of the pitch, and Shirley was running at him, and you've got the actual captain stood there shaking his head with his hands on his hips. Kev, are you going to pick this up now? Are you going to say, David, I don't know what you're talking about, the only way is up, baby, in the words of Yaz and her plastic population?
Well, I mean, I'd like to argue that in this of all seasons, Arsenal still have a chance. But I think, as Tim has pointed out, momentum is everything. And, you know, when Arsenal have won the title before, they've had momentum at this time. And I think that's really the frustrating thing, that, you know, in recent seasons we have been, not necessarily in first place, but certainly within touching distance of the lead in springtime, certainly 2008, 2010, 2011, all those years you could point and say, well, if Arsenal would put a run together a bit like they did at the end of last season, then they could have sneaked the title. So it's hugely frustrating that after so many times we still seem to be tripping up for some reason when Alex Ferguson's squeaky bum time starts to arrive. and you've got to wonder if it's a psychological failing in the club at the moment, which maybe needs to be addressed by some wholesale changes. And I think with more and more of these heavy defeats to big teams, the goodwill is slowly dissipating towards the manager. And the whole thing about the 1,000th game was tremendously sad on one level, but actually quite symbolic on another, that you know, he last won a trophy before he played 500 games, as I understand it. So we've had the second half of his reign completely potless, and some would argue pointless. So I just think no, there's no chance of Arsenal winning the title now. Even on paper, though, you know, you could say there is. And it's really your future questions in this podcast are going to dictate, I think, what our opinion is of the future, and whether, you know, it is Arsenal or not, and if there is any point, really, because as far as I see, it's same old, same old.
You've raised many points there to carry on talking, a lot of them based on the future and where do we go from here. But just staying where we are at the moment and looking at where we are at the moment and where we were this time last year. I mean, in the last 10 matches of last season, the philosophy looked a bit to start by ensuring the game was not lost, waiting for opportunities to score to develop. And I think it's safe to say for the last 10 games of last season and the last 3-4 months of this year, we were the best team in the country. I mean, what's happened, Tim? I mean, why the change year on? Why are we 0-0 at half time if we're lucky?
Well, partly look at the fixtures that fell in that calendar year. What we can't cope with is playing the better teams, particularly away from home, both in Europe and in the Premier League. It's an inability to cut it when it really matters against the good teams. And if you actually, you know, it was often commented on in the first half of this season, it was shooed away by some about, oh, that's a miserable view. But if you actually looked at the equivalent points taken this year compared to last year, we were running on the very same trajectory, because the fixture list helped us out with a friendlier start, and then put in the tough away games and the tough period that we're seeing now. What we perhaps hoped was that this Arsenal had turned a corner, but the way that they played at times meant that there was going to be a confidence, going to be an attitude that saw them rise to the occasion in these big games. But like Kev said, something is up. Something isn't right. Are those players not playing for him? Are they psychologically just not capable of it? Is it a mood around the club? But I don't see, this is so ingrained now, I don't see how it changes if something doesn't change fundamentally within the club. It's too much of a character trait. It's too much being put upon them. And I just don't see how, without just a change in psyche, a change in personnel, how are they going to stop this issue about not cutting it against the very best teams?
That's a good way of putting it, in fairness, Tim. And let's face it, I mean, going from that, Lath, you look afterwards, Wenger comes out and says, you know, it wasn't the 11 multi-million pound players' fault at all. Oxlade-Chamberlain, Cazorla gave balls away for goals and didn't bother chasing back. But, you know, sod that, it was all my fault. I mean, was the performance of the players simply the fault of the manager, or did they let him down? Who's actually to blame?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. For me, Wenger's strengths have been his weaknesses and vice versa, and he's a very, very loyal manager, basically. You could argue that loyalty has been abused by players, certainly since 2008, I would argue. And, Tim mentioned it, the change in psyche, whether it's going to be Wenger changing, which I'm not sure if I can see that, or whether we're going to appoint another manager, but there's something needs to be changed, because there's no mental toughness there, there's no pride, there's no fight. And I don't know why that was. Ultimately, it's the players on the pitch. But who directs them? It's the manager. And we've lost a game after 7 minutes on Saturday, and that's just not good enough.
It's strange, isn't it? He rewards them all with these big new contracts. They all come out with platitudes about how much they respect him, love him, owe their career to him, best manager ever. Well, bloody well, get out on the pitch and prove it then. Anyone can put out a press release or do a tweet about the big new contract he's awarded you, the faith he's put in you, but you're not really performing on the pitch. Either his assessment of your value is wrong, or you're letting him down, that something is very wrong in the system. It's not an aberration. This isn't unfair to pick up on this game. It was the same at Anfield, the same at City. Stoke, which is one of the harder away games, actually was almost as bad, wasn't it? Yeah. There was just absolutely no show there. But there again, when you can earn 100k a week and take selfies in front of the Spurs fans when you pulled off a win there, I mean, what on earth is that all about?
Yeah.
Take your selfies when you've won a bloody trophy.
Yeah.
You think too much of themselves, some of these lads, and they just need to roll their sleeves up and win a few games. But maybe they're part of a culture, and some of the Arsenal fan base has fueled this, which says, oh, fourth place is a trophy. Oh, you're brilliant. You've got into fourth. You're a genius. Aren't you doing well on the resources you've got? Celebrating failure. Don't like this celebrating failure. And I think when you celebrate failure, you end up with the sort of thing that happened at Stamford Bridge at the weekend.
It makes me think of St James's Park at the end of last season when one of Koscielny's 26 goal-mouth scrambles led to a 1-0 win, and Mertesacker was at the front in front of us, both fists pumping into the air as though we'd just won the general election, the X Factor and the Premier League. I mean, going back to...
they do all get their bonuses, of course.
There's a bonus for finishing in fourth place.
Well, there's a bonus for... It's interesting, the bonus is actually paid for reaching the Champions League knockout stages. So you have to, if you come fourth, you have to win the qualifier game in August, and then the bonus is paid. But in effect, obviously, coming fourth is the major trigger of that. So when they're jumping up and down and celebrating like that at Newcastle, they're thinking of the new indoor swimming pool that's going in.
Our footballers. Well, I'll come back to players in a minute, because let's face it, we've got 70 of them to address. But Kev, in light of what Tim and Leith both put in different ways, was Jose Mourinho, the man who Wenger's never beaten in his professional career, was his comment about Wenger being a specialist in failure ultimately justified?
Well, it depends on your criteria. If your criteria is the financial well-being of a football club, then it wasn't justified. If your criteria is winning trophies, unfortunately it was. And I mean, Arsenal, even before our last trophy, was noted for effing up more than one very good opportunity to win trophies, even before he was at Arsenal. You know, he did even have a reputation as a bit of a serial loser, always finishing second when he was at Monaco. And if you think about the team that Arsenal had, he should have won the league more often in his first 8 years. He should have won the title in 1999, should have won the title in 2003.
Has a far from impressive record in Europe.
Well, another point, you know. So, I mean, ultimately, a specialist in failure, well, I mean, that's one way of putting it, but he certainly failed more often than, or by all rights, he should have if he's a great manager. And it's the one thing that does actually rankle with Wenger himself, that he can't put himself on the same podium as managers that have won the Champions League. And I remember I was actually at the final in Glasgow in 2002 when Real Madrid beat Bayer Leverkusen, and there was a gathering of managers on the pitch before the games, had their photo taken, about four or five of them. Wenger was included, but it was interesting, he was the only one that hadn't actually won the Champions League.
He wasn't the one behind the camera taking the picture, was he?
He should have been, but it's sort of, you know, it is on his managerial CV, and he's all too well aware of it, the big glaring omission. And I think you can see by his behaviour when Arsenal are being knocked out of the Champions League, it's hurting him more than some of the Premier League defeats, because he knows that he's not going to have that many chances. He knows that he has at least won the Premier League in the past. He wants it badly, but I just can't see it happening unless he flukes it at some other club. A bit like, you know, Di Matteo, you could argue, maybe fluked it with Chelsea, I don't know, or Tony Barton, if you want to go back to the...
Peter Wythe.
I mean, let's face it, when all is said and done, if your criteria of success is winning trophies, then in recent times, you know, the last 7-8 years, then yes, Arsenal has been a failure.
But Leith, if he wants it that much... you know, he's got a 3-year extension on the table in front of him, which let's face it,
I think 50, it's 2 years.
Is it a 2-year extension?
I think it's 2 years. Yeah.
Okay, so that means a 10% pay rise rather than 15% pay rise. I mean, but Leith, why do you think he's not signed it yet? Why has he not signed his contract renewal?
Why hasn't he signed his contract? I mean, if you look back to all the other times he's signed his contract, he's always sort of played a bit of a game of cat and mouse. He's, I know he was sort of courted by Real Madrid and a few other teams, certainly in the glory days. He would just leave it to the last minute. And obviously, if he came out and said he was signing his contract on Sunday, yeah, there wouldn't be people happy, basically. But, yeah, I mean, going back to sort of when Wenger was at Monaco, 91-92, they lost to Werder Bremen in the Cup Winners' Cup final, and that was at Wembley as well. And, yeah, there's been games when we should have won, basically, in finals, and, like you say, about league titles as well, we should have won a lot more than we did. What I always find, and even going back to, like, the 2007 League Cup final, I know it was a League Cup, but playing with one arm behind your back, and he does that. It's so frustrating in terms of signing players. 2008, we could have really kicked on. January 2008, it just took a couple more players. The league was there for the taking that year, and we fell apart towards the end of the season for lack of a strong enough squad. And it's just, it's so frustrating because of the things he originally got wrong were really easy to fix. It's not like he's a Harry Redknapp buying 40 players and, you know, bankrupting the club sort of thing. He just needs a couple of players sometimes to fix the club. That's what I felt like. I think it's too late now.
This is a manager that doesn't treat winning trophies necessarily as the ultimate. I agree with Kev that I think the Champions League for him, but this is a manager that will put doing it on a shoestring as a kind of point of pride above increasing your chance of doing it. This is a manager that will leave £120 million sitting in the Arsenal bank account rather than strengthening the squad because he's queasy about the way the modern game has gone and how much players cost. This is a manager who will deliberately not strengthen in a certain position because he wants to see the young player come through and be able to tell the world he developed those players. I think he has slightly different objectives to a Mourinho, who will say, I'll show you my medals. Whereas I think Wenger will say, I'll show you the bank account I didn't use. I'll show you the young players I've developed. I'll show you the type of football I've played. And I think, you know, and we've seen that, you know, he's put Arsenal into cup finals with weakened teams, you know, because of that kind of philosophy and that attitude. Mm. And, you know, the goodwill that came from the Arsenal fan base that allowed him in a way to experiment and carry on like this for so long, because he did achieve some great things early on, has all but gone now, hasn't it? It's all but evaporated. People don't want that anymore. They want to see Arsenal win things and not get humiliated in the big games.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, wouldn't another couple of years of him be a good thing? I mean, technically, aren't we doing slightly better this season?
Well, I mean, in a way, that's part of the frustration, that we actually got ourselves into a position for the first time in three seasons to challenge. But it's the same old faults that have crept up again. So that even though you'd have thought, yes, this is a different Arsenal, as Tim says, game for game, probably is the same Arsenal. We'll see what the points tally is at the end of the season. I mean, what my fear is now is we might see a tailing off in the way we did in 2010, 2011, when we won about two of our last 11 games at Blackpool, and I think we'd been Man United at home, but everything else we drew or lost. Mm. I mean, yes, if we do score more points and we win the FA Cup, in theory, the team has improved. But ultimately, how many chances do you want to give this setup to actually prove its point and win something? I mean, let's face it. We've got to win the FA Cup, in fairness. You'd have thought so. And, I mean, we'll get onto this, I'm sure, but is that enough reason to have another two seasons of Arsenal? Because the one thing I notice about, let's say, Liverpool or Atletico Madrid is you don't always necessarily have to spend quite as much money to at least challenge, even if it's not every year, at least give yourself a chance once in a while. And my view is once you're in that position, you don't perform like you did against Chelsea. You know, I don't understand what was going on in the players' heads, why we were bombing on in the first 10 minutes with the fullbacks going forward, leaving our defence exposed. So, I mean, you're always going to lose the ball in midfield. It happens quite frequently. And I think what's been happening with Arsenal, it's probably happened a lot against lesser teams, and we've got away with it. But against the better teams, you don't. You're shown up. And so I'm not actually convinced we necessarily played any different on Saturday than we have been doing. It's just we've been getting away with it.
Mm.
And so there's a fundamental flaw there in the way the team is set up, in the mindset of the players. And, I mean, that does come from the manager. You know, the manager sets up the formation. He will tell the fullbacks how adventurous they should be. And the big difference is, at the end of last season, we started off saying we're not going to lose these games. That mentality. And we sneaked 8 wins out of 10. Well, a couple of them were good wins, but there were a few 1-0s as well. Okay, they were against crap teams. But there's nothing wrong with the principle, especially if you're playing better teams, of making sure you don't lose to start with. And, you know, that didn't happen against Chelsea. It seems to me that maybe Arsenal's got confident because, yeah, we're near the top of the table. Now we can sort of, we've proved that we can do this. Now let's play our expressive football. And at the end of the day, that has not worked at all. It'd been better going back to that survival kind of instinct that we had when we had to scrape points at the end of last season. And in a way, that's what he's got to do now. You know, we've got 8 games left in the league. You know, I mean, we've got to win as many as we can. Someone mentioned to me earlier that it's a remote possibility, but let's just say Man United won the Champions League and Arsenal finished 4th. We'd be in the same situation Tottenham were a couple of years back when Chelsea won the league. So, you know, there might be an argument that says we might need to be 3rd. I know it's a long shot, but, you know, strange things have happened.
What do you think, Laith? Wouldn't another couple of years of Wenger be a good thing? Yes or no?
Yes or no? Oh.
Gun to your head.
Oh. Until we lost heavily at Man City and Liverpool, certainly last Saturday, I would have probably said yes. Now I'm really in two minds, basically, because, I mean, you know, Mourinho called Wenger a specialist in failure. We grew up watching Arsenal in the 80s. Yeah, we're specialists in mediocrity then. You know, we 82-83, right? We got the semi-finals in both competitions, in both cup competitions, finished 10th playing dreadful football. So I've still got that at the back of my mind. Wenger, in his first 9 years of his reign, he revolutionised English football, certainly revolutionised the club. But you could almost argue he's had his time. Our teams don't press. We don't, you know, but Spain have won 3 European titles, 2 European titles in the World Cup, basically. Barcelona have won Champions League, La Liga's coming out their ears, basically, by playing a pressing game. When's the last time you saw Arsenal press? Saturday, we were playing so high up the pitch as well, with a cumbersome defence in terms of pace. Chelsea just picked us off, and that's what happened. I don't know whether his time's come and gone. I don't know whether he can reinvent himself. I don't know if he wants to reinvent himself, basically. But it's just so frustrating because all the ingredients should be there for us to really kick on. Certainly over the last few years, and it just hasn't happened for various reasons. And one of them is Arsene Wenger and Arsene Wenger's stubbornness in terms of spending money, in terms of developing the squad with experience, basically, and just in terms of spending money that fans have sort of contributed to the club. Certainly, you know, Tim's put together some really good figures and stuff, and if you look at some of them, you know, some of the revenues, basically, look at the match day revenues and the broadcast figures, they've gone up 35%, the broadcast. We don't need to pay another 3%. There's like someone said earlier, that there's a swell of goodwill that's just been gradually eroded and eroded because of Wenger's sort of stubbornness and intransigence, and it's just so frustrating.
Thank you for bringing up the AST analysis of Arsenal's half-year accounts. Coming across to you, Tim, is there anything you know as an AST board member with regards to why Wenger hasn't signed his agreement? I mean, in the past, when he has to renew his agreement, he does it in September, in the middle of the season, technically, but now he's seeing on it.
He also has sent out the message of what he's going to do and then gets round to do it.
Right.
It is unprecedented. It's also quite destabilising. If you think about it, of a board meant to be out there looking for another manager, what do you do? You know, this is a big summer for Arsenal. They need 6 or 7 signings. They need a right back, they need a striker, they need a defensive midfielder. If Sanya goes, you need 1, if not 2 centre halves because he covers that position. You need a goalkeeper to back up Szczesny. There's an awful lot of work to be done, and you don't actually know who your manager is going to be on the 1st of June without that. And so it's not particularly healthy, but it's purely his decision. There's been a contract offer on the table from the board for a long, long time. This is because he's not sure. He is not sure for various reasons. Now, I think it's wrong to say this is all about the FA Cup final, because actually that's a knockout tournament. It'd be great to win it. It might give a bit of a buzz, but I think you've got to look at the fundamentals. What direction is your club going in? Has it got a strategy? Is the manager on top of using his budget? Is he tactically up with where the game is now? Are the performances in the big games, not a
against a Wigan in the semi-final, but in the games that matter. And actually, whether you win or lose the FA Cup, I think you've got to ask the questions about the strategic setup of the club, the manager, and how he interacts with everyone. And I would say no to two more years unless there's change. And that change means he's got to hand over transfer decision making, scouting and transfer decision making to a board and someone like David Dean. You've got to start delegating coaching more. We haven't brought in an external coaching appointment for 18 years. 1,000 games and no one new has come in to freshen up that setup.
Because Bowles is
an internal appointment, you know, and in big positions, you know what I mean, where it matters. And so, you know, I do not feel that we have the strategic setup and direction as a football infrastructure at the moment. If Arsene Wenger were prepared to modernise around him and see some of these changes come in, then I'd be up for the discussion about whether he carries on for a year or two for stability and handover. It's not his trait, I think, to let go and change like that. But it's a much bit, to me, it's much more fundamental than will we win the next two knockout cup games.
Sorry, I was just going to ask, how much would you lay blame at the board? Certainly in terms of Dick Law and Mervyn Gazidis.
But what exactly does Dick Law do? I mean, you say Wenger's got a very major role in transfer.
To defend Dick Law, remember when David Dean left, Arsene Wenger was told he could appoint anyone from world football to work in a post to support him with football transfers, in effect a director of football. And he chose, again, an internal appointment. He chose the Spanish-speaking agent scout that the club used. Now, why did he choose him? He chose him because he wasn't going to interfere in any of the power base. You remember the classic quote, yeah, I'll have a director of football as long as they do whatever I say. The man, you know, is by instinct a control freak. He wants to be scout, manager, coach, transfer negotiator, and all of those. And it's too much in the modern game.
Yeah.
You know, it's moved on so much, even in the 18 years. But back to Dick Law, and the problem the board have always had is if they'd have lent in and said, no, we'll do that, he'll walk. So it's always, you know, in a way, it's been a stay or go, and they've always been too afraid of him. But yeah, he appointed Ivan Gazidis.
Yeah.
He got the say on who his boss was going to be. That it's just gone all topsy-turvy, and the governance and the proper football setup is not right inside Arsenal. The Arsenal Supporters Trust put forward a really detailed report calling for more independence, more football expertise to be added to the Arsenal board. What did we get? We got that well-renowned football expert, Josh Kroenke, appointed to the board. Now, that's it. You know, maybe he's a nice lad, and I'm sure they searched high and low until they found him. But he came through, you know, that tough executive search. Don't think he's been to watch Arsenal in 5 years. So, you know, where is that sense of support and challenge to Arsene Wenger when the latest board member is running a basketball franchise in Denver?
Selection of points there, to be honest, Tim. I mean, going back to the appointment of Ivan Gazidis, am I correct in saying that Arsenal Football Club made an offer to Peter Lowell of Celtic and Wenger vetoed it at the last minute?
No. Peter Lowell turned us down, wanted to stay at Celtic. They offered someone called Paul Donovan
at Vodafone.
That's it. Right. And Arsene Wenger vetoed him.
Vetoed his own boss. If I had that choice tomorrow,
what would you do to your boss?
He's a Liverpool fan, he won't be listening to you. But Marcus, you are the best general counsel ever worked for. That'd be lovely. So going back to Josh Kroenke, who's just been appointed to the board of directors, I mean, there is a little doubt that younger blood is needed on the board, whether it's a step in the right direction. I mean, you raised it yourself, Tim, it seems kind of ridiculous. Although, I did some research on this for an article in the Gooner, and he's currently the guy who runs two of the US franchises that the Kroenke family and Walmart are involved with, one of them being the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, that's the basketball team.
That's right. And they had a coach. He was an old guy. Everyone loved him, and he came in and got rid of him kind of straight away, so it's my understanding. Well, having said that, the team have got a lot better. But Kroenke himself does a lot of interviews afterwards, albeit on the franchise's own TV station. So that's my backing for him. I couldn't pick him out of a line of people. Free for all. Kev, you're looking at me with a face like a slap tosh. Your thoughts on it?
I mean, Oxlade-Chamberlain had a go at this at the weekend, but we don't normally play basketball.
Although I didn't have a glass full of water in my mouth, I'd be laughing hysterically. Kev, your thoughts on Kroenke Jr.?
Well, he's obviously there for succession. I mean, you know, there's no valid reason for him to join the board other than the fact his father owns the 66% of the club. it's just a nod to the future.
Yeah, it's saying we're here for the long term. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, there's...
Which is fine, but it's not going to strengthen, back to Lee's question, how is that actually going to improve the operational function of the Arsenal boardroom to make us a better football team?
I mean, I have heard that part of the reason that this contract has not been signed is that there is some kind of resistance at board level to doing things the way they have always been done. Now, this might be BS, I don't know, but the kind of feeling I'm getting is that Sir Chips Keswick, our chairman, has a bit more in the way of a view of how things should be done. And I think there's frustration on the board that the money that is in the coffers hasn't been spent.
Look how they, in effect, briefed against him on the Draxler deal. When they came out on the Thursday, it made it clear that the Arsenal board would sanction the signing, and it was down to Arsene Wenger's decision on the money. But they were making it clear, Kev, that it was his call not to spend the money, and they're getting frustrated with this.
Yes, so I think there might be an element whereby if a new deal is agreed, part of it is that these negotiations are handed over, that Wenger does not have the final say. Because I think it's fairly well known that what happens is he gets too involved in these negotiations. Dick Law cannot seal the deal.
He's not allowed to.
As David Dean used to be able to. You know, it basically, Arsene has to have the final word, and that has scuppered more than one deal. So I suspect there is a little bit of a power struggle going on. Because the one thing which I will say about the board, they're not completely immune from fan feeling. And I am pretty sure that the signing of Mesut Ozil was a response to what happened after the Villa game.
Mm.
You know, little things like Chris Hudson's Arsenal fan TV video becoming a viral sensation and being witnessed by 750,000 people.
It was more like 3 million. I know, I heard from most of them.
I know Tim was targeted individually, which may or may not have been justified.
For being too much of a Wenger acolyte, apparently.
I suspect the word patience has not been used in Tim's vocabulary too much since. However, that is, as PR goes... That's not good for the club.
Do you think that really had an effect on the board? I mean,
I do.
Really?
I really do, because the one thing that the Arsenal are media savvy, and they know the damage that kind of thing can do. And
I agree. Remember that Ozil was being offered around all of Europe all summer, and no one would take him. You know, and we weren't interested. Wasn't on Wenger's list of what he wanted. Was too much money, and suddenly he was. Arsenal had to have a big signing at the end of the transfer window. Now, I think, you know, the player they got potentially is a very good player, although some of the reasons Ancelotti moved him on, we're now seeing, and we've got to hope that gets overcome a bit more in year two. But I'm with Kev, I think that signing, that they'd have got lynched. Also, look, that club was dying. The team was dying. He's where I would still say he was worth the money, whatever his performance is, when a morale boost he gave to the other 10. He picked the fan base, the team, everybody believed again and went on, didn't they? And went on a bit of a run. But yeah, if we'd have scraped past Villa 2-1 rather than lost that game, I do wonder what would have happened. Because he certainly was not a strategic target of the summer. They ballsed up the transfer window, no end. The strategic target was a striker, and they didn't get one. And now, of course, we're paying the price for it.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm still not convinced that the reaction of the fans is taken on board by the board, because, excuse the pun, because as far as I'm concerned, as long as they've got 60,342 customers every fortnight, their job is done.
They don't like it when half the 60,000 are shouting, spend some fucking money, and you don't know what you're doing at them, though, do they?
Well, in that case, any of you, Lath, what do you think was behind the board's decision, well, the club's decision, excuse me, to announce ticket price rises back in December?
Yeah, that was absolutely shocking, wasn't it? They were sort of riding on the crest of a wave at the time, really. But there's no need to increase prices. Certainly not 3%. You know, the amount of money we're coming in, it's coming in through TV revenues and increased matchday revenues, which is what they promised us when the new stadium was coming on board. Why 3%? We pay the highest prices in the world, practically.
In world sport.
Yeah, and what gets me is, you know, when you get Stoke fans going, oh, there's no atmosphere at the Ashburton Grove, the Emirates, whatever you want to call it. We put our money where our mouth is. I pay £1,000 a year, so do my mates. They're black cabbies, they're all sorts, really. They're mechanics. They can't afford that, but we pay it every year because we love the club. It's an absolute insult to charge 3% for what we're playing.
Why'd they announce it when they did, Kev? Is it because we were top of the league, or virtually there or thereabouts? We were playing sexy football. We just scored a Holland 1978 goal against Norwich, and we were sexier than sex.
Yeah, that is it. I mean, they picked a good time to release bad news because they didn't know what would happen, and they wanted to avoid the potential uproar that would have. Let's say they announced it today.
Well, normally it's done in early April, you know, heading into May. How many times has it been announced in December? Once in 125 years. It was, which shows you, it was the most cynical ploy. It was also announced 3 days after, interestingly, they'd done the kind of winter Q&A, which is done as a Christmas drinks, but where the support groups and others get to go in. Funnily enough, that, isn't it? It's announced just afterwards, not as an opportunity to then hear what people think or even ask about it. It was just done to try and get away with it. Yeah. Where it was compounded, though, I feel, in being greedy, because I can understand the view about the small increase every year rather than try and catch up every now and again with a bigger one, was when there then became extra games to go on the season ticket, to then screw one in at a Category A and the other at a B, on top of having the 3%, I think really was wrong. I think having done the 3%, they should have been much more generous with credit 8 and 9, or rather game 8 and 9, and charged it at average cost. Put them both through as game B or even less, having acknowledged that they'd taken the 3%. Yeah. They kind of took your nose and rubbed it in it, didn't they, by doing both?
Well, here's an open question to anyone who's got the answer. I mean, looking again at the AST analysis of Arsenal's half-year accounts, with the 35% increase in broadcast money, 27% increase in commercial work from, in fairness, which is Gazidis' job, and he's doing it better than most CEOs in this country, and 10% increase in match day revenue, what exactly is the justification for a further ticket price rise?
This summer, on the 1st of June, when all the season ticket money is collected and the new sponsorship deals are coming in, the cash pile will have raised to about £150 million. Does anybody think that the £3 million, which is a lot for fans, 3% is a lot when you're paying £1,000. We're going to notice that 3%. Does anyone think Arsenal would notice that £3 million that it raises not being there? Does anyone think that Arsene Wenger is going to spend £137 million and say, I wish I had £3 million more? And I'd love to know, did they go to Arsene Wenger and ask him whether he wanted that money or not? Because a few years ago, it may even have been the man sitting next to me now who asked what he'd do with £100 million, and I think that question was asked because it was a talk of being a rights issue at the time, and the club, he said that he'd give it back. And in a more formal environment with the board, when I asked that question, I was told they'd asked Arsene Wenger if he wanted the £100 million from a rights issue, and he said no, the club could manage where it was. I very much doubt they went and asked him whether he wanted this 3%, so it will go and sit in the Arsenal bank account, because it won't get spent this summer.
How much money have we wasted on Dupont's wages as well?
Well, about an hour. Bentner actually neatly earns what that increase is worth.
Is that right? Christ, yeah, what a sad point of view.
Yeah, £3 million a year.
Yeah.
Kev, anything further to add on that?
Yes, I was informed earlier this evening that I was under a false impression about Abu Dhabi. I thought his contract was up this summer. Apparently, it's not for another year.
Sadly, correct answer.
My jaw dropped. The inefficiency at the club, especially given Gazidis' words when he arrived about having a laser focus on the outgoings in the wage department, is, well, it's improved, yes, but it's still a hell of a lot of waste. And
but you see, this is an interesting and often unrealised thing about Arsene Wenger, that he will spend money. He will reward very well, arguably above market rate, to some of his young players, and he'll also reward some of his lesser players. He's always, Lee Dixon tells a story, doesn't he, about how he went through he went through the wages when he arrived and immediately paid him and Winterburn more. That's right, because traditionally the fullback was always the lowest paid position in the team, and it worked on a scale, and you're all part of the team. But so this is why we run a very big wage bill. Don't forget that we're going to run a wage bill of 165 million this year. It compares to, you know, Everton's 60 million,
yeah,
or even Spurs 105 to 110 million. We run a very big wage bill because, and I think Arsene Wenger has a bias towards perhaps paying a bit more than he should in wages and not spending as much as he should in a transfer market, because that goes back to this collegiate approach and this nannying approach perhaps towards some of the younger ones.
And you wonder why the players are so loyal to us.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
yes.
He's bought them.
Yeah.
You know, and he buys them as long as someone else isn't going to pay them more. So what happens is the superstars who actually really develop and really push on then just up sticks.
Right.
You know, your Fabregas, your Nasri, I mean, Alex Song, I mean, Adebayor, Gael Clichy. You know, the club have lost first team players when they've got to a level where someone else can pay them more money. In fairness to them, they're still very loyal to Arsene in the way that they won't slag him off once they've departed.
Fair point.
But as far as the weekly wage is concerned, someone's going to pay them more, they'll go.
Do you think that's the thinking behind John Terrell, Hector Bellerin, Juan Plezeguolo, that kind of thing? Bellerin, who might make his debut tomorrow night, they're thinking, I'm young, Catalunian at Barcelona, can't get in their youth team, but Arsenal want me. I'll do a Fabregas and bugger off over to England for 7 years.
He who pays the piper calls a tune, and if someone's going to pay someone more money, they're going to work for them. It's just basic human nature. You can't blame the players.
Fair point. Well, staying off the pitch just for a little bit longer, but another aspect to the behind-the-scenes stuff. Moving over to you, Laith. I think it's safe to say that whilst we played very well for the first 4 months of the season, our best player was probably Aaron Ramsey, but he fell out. Well, didn't even fall over. Got a little twinge on Boxing Day at Upton Park, and since then he's been out for 3 weeks, which has become a month, which has become the best part of 4 months. He's actually got a Sonogoism, as it were. And if you are listening, Aaron, can you just let us know you are alive? That'd be lovely. With his delayed return from injury, that the whole shenanigans with Sonogo and players being injured for 2 weeks, which turns into 2 years. I mean, are we right to question the club's medical team?
Yeah, well, that's a very good point. You look back at the sort of shenanigans the medical department's sort of been involved with. You know, I remember from Ireland they told us he was out for 3 days. He'd been out for 18 months almost in total. He obviously, Wenger signs highly tuned athletes. That maybe there's an issue there in terms of, you know, just the way they pull up in training and stuff like that, but it's got to be deeper than that. It's got to be a root and branch overhaul, I'd say. I mean, they brought in, was it Brian Driscoll's brother?
Who was Neil O'Driscoll, yeah.
O'Driscoll, yeah. I mean, he was there, but I don't know if they've done studies on the injuries and how they've happened and all the rest of it. It's just not good enough, though. I remember we used to laugh at Spurs in the mid-90s when they sort of complained about their injuries and stuff, and it was always this time next year we're going to have a full complement of players and all the rest of it. But we've had far too many injuries for far too long. I mean, going back to what Kevin Zimmer was saying at the Derby, he'd be due for a testimonial soon. How many games has he played for Arsenal?
Oh, Christ.
It's shocking, and it's... Yeah, you know, like we were saying about, you know, Wenger's a loyal manager, but how many injuries has Derby had? 36, 37?
Something like that.
Yeah, you've got to draw a line somewhere. The medical team's got to be a bit more callous in a sense, and just go, well, this bloke's not going to be fit for Arsenal long term. There's got to be some sort of, you know, strategy in terms of standing up to Wenger and going, well, this bloke is just not fit enough for purpose, basically.
Kev, do you think it's something to do with the medical team, or do you think it's Wenger's lack of fitness training? I remember when he first joined the club, Lee Dixon said, normally you come back in pre-season and you're thinking you're just going to run around for 3 hours. We did about half an hour, 45 minutes, Wenger sent us home, and I thought, this is silly. Next thing I know, I'm running quicker than anyone else in the league come May. Is Wenger still doing the same things 18 years later, or is something else wrong?
Well, apparently Wenger hasn't changed his techniques in 18 years. That's the first thing. I think there's a lot of misdiagnosis on the medical front. I think they get a lot of things wrong. That's down to the individuals. It's possible that Arsene doesn't follow their advice. I mean, I read something online about a week ago that I think it was seen in the Daily Mirror. The reason Theo was injured was because he'd just come back from injury and he was played 5 successive 90 minutes. And basically his joints couldn't take it. You know, they hadn't recovered sufficiently, so there's no wonder he got injured. So you'd have thought in that case Wenger was advised, presumably. I mean, we were supposed to spend so much money on this technological equipment to identify the red zone or whatever it is where players are likely to get injured. The only thing you can say for sure is the statistics reveal that Arsenal have 50% more injured players than the average, and it can't be coincidence. So I suspect it is. There's something fundamentally wrong, A, in the misdiagnosis, and B, in the way the players are prepared for matches. And the only way to change it, I suspect, is a change of manager. Because I can't see. I mean, Wenger does control everything. So if someone really needs to get to the bottom of it, it's got to be without him calling the shots. So there's a big problem, and it's hurt us. I mean, you can see now. You know, we're out without Ramsey, Walcott, Wilshire. I can't remember when Koscielny's out at the moment. We shouldn't be missing five players at one time. I mean, you can add Diaby for that if you want to laugh.
And Bender technically, but even so.
But you know, there's something not right, and it's obviously not been addressed because it's been going on for far too long. So there is a fundamental underlying problem at the club, which is handicapping the team's chances of winning things. But because Arsenal has complete control, no one's saying boo to a goose and saying, hang on a minute. We have to have a look at this and do something different. So all this stuff about Wenger, the visionary, she may have been in 1996 when the players were going out to the pub and eating what they wanted. Fair enough, but we have moved on and other teams are doing it better. We need to get our act sorted, really.
We'll move on to the pitch in 2 seconds, but before we do, Lathan, you mentioned the word testimonial with regards to Abu Diaby. Do you know this summer is technically the testimonial of Johan Giroud, who's been a professional at Arsenal Football Club since 2004?
Great stuff.
Any news as to who we're playing? Or
of course he may be coming back.
Well, Hanover don't put him in the team, you know. So
how long has he got on his contract?
Good question. Tim, any ideas?
Oh, no, I haven't let that one out for a while.
I don't think he's looked at it himself.
I don't think he's out of contract, though, is he?
So I don't think so.
Perhaps there's one more year. He, of course, had one of these contracts that self-renewed.
Really?
Yeah, it was based on, you know, when there was a bit of a fuss about this. Perhaps not a totally foolish contract clause, which was if you play so many games, you will get the right to renew and your wages will go up, because the theory being that if you're getting played all the time, you must be doing very well. That was a period of quite a lot of injury in those positions, and where he covered quite a bit of fullback at one point.
He did.
I seem to remember. Yeah. Well, actually not for that long, because that really didn't work.
He got subbed out for 20 minutes in one game.
But I would have still counted as an appearance. But anyway, he triggered the appearance level, not necessarily to Arsenal's complete satisfaction, and got his new contract and his extra money.
Bloody hell. Yeah. Well, gents, to finish us up on the pitch, is there any way our beloved Arsenal can fail to beat Wigan Athletic at Wembley to make the FA Cup final? Laith.
Well, I talked to, I interviewed Patrick Barkley for the Gooner the other day.
And, lovely man.
Yeah, he's fantastic, lovely bloke. And basically he was saying, I said, you know, have you got any message for Arsenal sort of before the semi-final against Wigan? He said, be afraid, be very afraid. he said he looked at Wigan's bench against Ipswich the week before, and they had Josh McEachran on Chelsea. I think he's still registered
on
Chelsea.
He's on that.
Callum McManaman, who was sort of mentioned in England.
Man of the match in the FA Cup final last year?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, players like that. And our capacity to shoot ourselves in the foot in big matches is getting worse, basically. And I'm just so fearful myself.
I mean, bloody hell.
We've been to Wembley, all of us have been there so many times over the years. We always have a good day out. You know, we're getting down the pub at 11 o'clock, basically, for 5 o'clock kick-off. We're going to have a good day. But it means nothing if we lose the game. And I'm just so worried that we're going to, you know, and then on Monday morning it'll be on the website, oh yeah, the players need to learn from this, we need to take it on board, and be far too late by then. So yeah, I am genuinely...
The world will end if we don't win that one.
It's not Valley Parade on a Tuesday night, is it?
I went to that game as well, actually.
Yeah. Oh, Christ almighty. Was it a nice curry afterwards? Or,
yeah, we did have a nice curry.
That was something, that's fine. Kev, are you slightly fearful of the FA Cup semi-final?
Well, the bottom line is Wigan went to Man City and did a job on them.
And are defending FA Cup.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
They're a better team than us in the last 2 or 3 years of winning trophies.
They won't be fazed by the occasion. They've been to Wembley 3 times in the last year. So Arsenal should win, but I don't think anyone is actually underestimating Wigan now. You know, I think most people are actually giving them the respect due. The important thing is that the manager and the players also do that, because that's what will make the difference. You know, I mean, last time we were at Wembley against Birmingham, the players didn't play like they should. No. You know, there was just something wrong that day. They really need to be mentally switched on and up for it and determined, and start the game like they're not going to bloody lose it, for starters. Get their way into it. And then actually, once you get past an hour, in theory, if it is still level, the fitness level should kick in, and Arsenal should then be able to exploit the space that there will be. What you don't want is we can score in a goal, going ahead, and then being able to sort of lock up shop. So, Arsenal should win that game. But, you know, I mean, you can't take it for granted.
It can't be as bad as the last time we were at Wembley. I mean, in that game, it went to the last minute and our young, arrogant, self-centred Polish goalkeeper got knocked over by a clumsy French centre-half, and that thing won't happen. Oh, shit. Oh, Christ almighty. Right. Almost time to wrap up, unfortunately. But before we do, a few words about the current issue of the Gooner from Kevin.
Yes, I have it in front of me. It goes on sale. If you're listening to this before the Swansea game, it'll be available then, also against Man City and West Ham. Got an interview with Ray Parler, which was done by the gentleman about 6 feet to my right, Leif Yusuf, in this issue. Also, a special feature on Nike kits, as we've had 20 years of them, and good and bad, and obviously this summer we'll see the end of their tenure as our manufacturers, and also pieces on whether or not Arsenal are really a team that implode in every spring, or is that just a convenient argument, and a slag off of Nicholas Bentner as well. What more can you want?
Someone slagged off Nicholas Bentner.
So £2.50.
That piece is by Arsene Wenger.
It helps us survive and be around next season if you'll start buying copies for those who don't regularly.
Finally, the usual reminder that if you want to email us about anything related to the podcast, our address is goonapodcast@gmail.com. And with that, it's goodbye from Kevin.
Good evening, everybody.
From Tim.
Goodbye.
And Leith.
Goodbye.
We'll be back towards the end of April with another podcast. Until then, this is your host, David Udo, saying good night and thanks for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Well, hey!